You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Friday here on the North Shore Drive podcast, the Steelers have two new offensive coaches. We'll talk about Zach Azani and Tom Arth and what they bring to the table in the Steelers offense. That, the NFL awards with TJ Watt, did he get snubbed with Myles Garrett getting Defensive Player of the Year? And what the Steelers could learn from both the teams in the Super Bowls, all that here and more on the North Shore Drive podcast. Chris Carter, Brian Batko, let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive Podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Brian Batko, one of our great Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Find all our written work at post-gazette.com. Find our podcasts on your favorite podcasting app and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoyed, subscribe to this YouTube channel to get all of your daily content from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, which is sponsored by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. There were 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are local. 80 of those local beers available on tap at any point in time. They got new ones switching in and out. More on that later. Brian, we've been wondering when the Steelers would make some moves on the coaching staff that would go the coaches behind Arthur Smith, and now we finally have some answers. They have added now at the wide receiver coach position, Zach Azani, who comes by way of the Jets, and before that, the Broncos, and Tom Arth as the quarterback's coach, who was a pass game specialist for the Chargers the last two seasons with Justin Herbert. Though it seems that he's just the quarterback's coach for the Steelers, and that the pass game coordinator is still something that could be added to if they wanted to. What was your read on these two guys specifically being the additions here? Because they're not older coaches, but you know, I think Arth is a little bit different because he's just been in the league for 2 years. But Azani's a guy who's been in the NFL for quite some time. And you look at it, the Bears in 2017, the Broncos from 2018 to 2022, and the Jets last year. What did these signings tell you?
Told me that the Steelers definitely valued experience and, you know, guys who have sort of been around in the league to this point. You know, like you said, we'll get into Arth, but just starting with Azani. You know, he's not a big name or anything like that, not a notable former player, which you often see at those wide receivers coach positions. You know, Frisman Jackson, who's out, played in the NFL. He had sort of that natural, you know, respect quotient about him. But Azani, somebody who's just kind of worked his way up from the college ranks. And then, yeah, you mentioned the three NFL teams that he's coached with. Seems like he's well respected around the league. You know, I think the biggest question for that specific unit within the Steelers is he going to be somebody that Deontay Johnson and George Pickens respect and take coaching from? Because I think despite being a former pro himself, I don't know that Frisman Jackson always had those two guys on the right page. We know about the issues with effort and intensity at times last season. So Azani has been around big time wide receivers. He's been in receiving cores where there is kind of a blurred line between who's the one and who's the two. I was reading a little bit about his time in Denver where I think it was, you know, Cortland Sutton was there and Emmanuel Sanders was there. Then Jerry Jeudy came in a little bit later too. So So he's been in these kind of rooms. He seems like he's a good coach who knows what he's doing. That's good. I don't know that there's an obvious connection to Arthur Smith, but a lot of these guys, when they're at coaching conventions and meetings and just sort of being in the same orbit as each other for a long time, they get to know each other. They talk about each other. They know who they like and who they respect. So I imagine that's part of the reason why he's here. Is kind of interesting to me that he's making a lateral move from the Jets to the Steelers. Makes you wonder, was he going to be out in New York? But he coached Garrett Wilson there. And last I checked, Garrett Wilson's pretty darn good. I guess you could argue he's, if you watched him at Ohio State, he didn't need a whole lot of fine tuning or technique coaching. But either way, he's somebody else who's on Azani's resume.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I noticed about Azani was he's worked with so many different kinds of wide receivers. Like, he's worked with Cortland Sutton, who was a top pick, who went from being just maybe a guy people saying, oh, is he going to be a bust, to being a Pro Bowler and then getting a big contract. He's also coached guys like Tim Patrick, who were an undrafted guy who eventually turned into a pretty good receiver for the Broncos for a couple years. So he's coached different level of guys. He's coached, like you said, Garrett Wilson. He has a wide array of different types of receivers that he's coached.
Coach Antonio Brown in college. Granted, that was a long time ago now. But
07 to 09, him and Antonio Brown's time at Central Michigan perfectly aligned. I was going to say that. So he's seen everything as far as types of receivers he has to coach. And I think that that's the asset that he brings to the table with both dealing with Deontay Johnson, a veteran, and George Pickens, a younger veteran. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Steelers added a rookie wide receiver in this draft class. So, and you also have Calvin Austin trying to find his way. So I think experience, like you said, was of prime importance. And the Steelers got a guy who, also, interestingly, when I was looking at it, this is a guy who survived three head coaches in Denver. When you look at his time, he got there when I think it was Vance Joseph was the head coach. He was hired by Vance Joseph. Joseph was fired. He was kept on through Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio was fired. He kept on through Nate Hackett. And then when Nate Hackett was fired, he went with Nate Hackett to the Jets. And I thought that was pretty interesting. You oftentimes when there's a whole upheaval of a staff, position coaches go too, and he did not. And I think maybe that says something about how much those guys believed him in his receiver room.
Well, was it it was those 2022 Broncos that I think Sean Payton called that like the worst coaching job of all time in the NFL by Nathaniel Hackett in his lone season as a head coach. So if you put any stock into that, Zach Azani was on that staff, but obviously that's it's not quite that simple or reductive, but either way, I mean, he's somebody who it's a nomadic job title, a position coach in the NFL for the most part, or college football for that matter. But you're right, he did have some staying power in Denver. And then, last year with the Jets, maybe they felt the need to make some changes offensively, but that just kind of became a dumpster fire once Aaron Rodgers went down in week one. So I was just watching some clips of Azani mic'd up over the years. Seems like your classic position coach, a very intense guy, but good rapport with the players too. And a little side note, there was a story on him in The Athletic a few years back, and he mentioned that one of his favorite wide receivers coaches around the league is the late Daryl Drake, who was with the Steelers, of course, his sudden and tragic passing in 2019, and that was Deontay Johnson's guy. I mean, he was so heartbroken when that happened, and I'm sure that that'll be some common ground for those two, given their love for Daryl Drake.
I'm right there with you. Let's talk real quick about Tom Arth, the quarterback's coach that they've hired. Not as much of a track record for him in the NFL. He was the head coach at Akron for three seasons, head coach at Chattanooga, came up at John Carroll. So smaller schools there in college football before the Chargers gave him a shot as their pass game specialist. And I thought that was an interesting move on the Chargers to go get that kind of a guy. But bringing him in brings him someone who's worked with Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert has put up, solid numbers the past few years. The last 2 years, the Chargers offense this year, it wasn't too good. They ranked 21st in points, but the year before that, they ranked 13th in points, 9th in yards. They were able to move the ball. And I think everyone kind of recognizes that, like, hey, like, Herbert's something there. They have a lot of other problems there. And they were also top three in passing that year. So looking at Arth, I think this is a different kind of a voice to add to the room there.
Well, he and Brandon Staley coached together way back in the day at John Carroll. So that was the Chargers connection for those two. Everything I hear and sort of know about Tom Arth is that he's a really sharp guy, probably did very well in the interview process here with the Steelers to fill this most important position, really, on any staff, but particularly their staff with a third-year quarterback who you're trying to get the most out of and see progress. And let's just be honest, if Kenny Pickett doesn't take it there, you're going to want Tom Arth to work with probably another young quarterback sooner than later. So that is a key role for a lot of NFL teams these days, is that quarterback's coach. It also kind of serves as a launching pad for a lot of the first steps to offensive coordinator, then potentially head coaches down the line. So he's been around, like you said, more so in the college game, kind of was on the beginning of this latest trend of coaches going from the college ranks to the pros. So he was the head man at a few different stops and dealt with all the ups and downs that come with being the head coach of a program, recruiting, on-field stuff, off-field issues. Now he just gets a chance to focus on football, and I think you'll probably see the type of sharp offensive mind who spent some time behind Peyton Manning as a backup with the Colts. So that's probably what you're getting out of Arth, who, it's going to be paramount for him to forge a good relationship with Kenny Pickett. And based on what I know about those two guys, I think they'll be able to do that quite seamlessly.
I think it'll be interesting to see what they're able to put together with these new guys on staff. When we come back, we're going to talk about the awards night that was Cam Hayward finally getting the elusive Walter Payton Manning Award for Man of the Man of the Year Award. There we go. But also, of course, what everyone wants to talk about, T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett getting the Defensive Player of the Year. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break here on the North Shore Drive Podcast, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. They have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area. 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And when you go to Mike's Beer Bar, 80 of those local beers, when we're talking about the ones you can get on tap, they're rotating new ones in and out all the time. So you can always experience new bars, freshly pouring from their taps, new beers from different breweries from across the Western Pennsylvania area. They do amazing things there, as well as have amazing food, like their steak on a stone meal. It's Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. So go to Mike's Beer Bar, get your sports fix, and experience the best bar in Pittsburgh. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back here in the North Shore Drive Podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Brian Batko, talking all things Steelers. Okay, Brian, let's talk about the awards night. And there is a lot of hoopla right now going on from Steelers fans. And, I think that there's a lot of justification behind hoopla when you get Myles Garrett winning Defensive Player of the Year over T.J. Watt, despite T.J. Watt having 5 more sacks, 6 more quarterback hits, 2 more tackles for loss, scoring a defensive touchdown, breaking up passes, getting an interception, pressuring the quarterback by a much higher rate, 85 total pressures to 76 if you consider Sports Information Systems. Pro Football Reference has it 13 more pressures. I think that it's an interesting topic to go over why something like this happened, because it would be different if Myles Garrett had like 1 or 2 less sacks than TJ Watt and did all these other things on top of that. And like their stats were jumbled up in 2 different things. When you look down across the board, the only thing that you can give Myles Garrett is that, according to Pro Football Focus and just their stats, when you look at others, that he has a better pass rush productivity rate, which is a stat that they kind of come up with on their own. But like, I subscribe to Sports Information Systems, and they even have TJ Watt pressuring the quarterback more often, winning in pass rush stats more often. It seems like the whole argument for Myles Garrett comes from these stats that come from one outlet that provides advanced data on the NFL. And I don't see it coming from anywhere else. Do you feel like there's more logic behind the whole Myles Garrett argument than other than those numbers that keep getting provided whenever this discussion comes up?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a contextual thing too. And, you know, you can't just use numbers for everybody who's going to say stats don't lie. You can go talk to Cam Hayward about the position that he plays and why, you know, he says stats often do lie, because you need to know what his responsibilities are on a given play. You need to know, is he being doubled or even triple teamed because of how disruptive he is. Now, that's not quite the same comparison of a D tackle to an outside linebacker. Myles Garrett is an edge rusher as well, but slightly different alignments. He's got his hand in the ground for the most part. TJ Watt is standing up rushing. And here's what I always say to this, Chris. Would I have voted TJ Watt for AP Defensive Player of the Year? Yes, I would have. I have a PFWA vote. I used it on TJ Watt. He didn't win the award from that outlet either. But I acknowledge that I watch him every single week. I watch him wreak havoc and dominate every single game from the press box. I don't watch Myles Garrett every week. So, you know, it's sort of easy for me to use that and then say, oh yeah, the numbers back me up on this too. How can this guy not be the Defensive Player of the Year? I don't shout down anybody who has an argument for Garrett, because I do think they're often based in, you know, stuff that goes beyond the traditional counting numbers. You know, the way that he didn't generate much in terms of the box score at the end of the season, that's cause for concern too. But I would also keep in mind that, hey, the playoff game, these awards are regular season awards. You kind of have to throw that out. Yes, the Browns were bad in that one and he didn't do much, but you know, Micah Parsons from the Cowboys, he was third in the running. He also kind of took a flamethrower to people on Twitter last night and said, Myles Garrett had a better season than TJ Watt and has been the better player. You know, that's one of his peers saying that too. So it's not just dumb sports writers who are at this thing, which I usually bristle at when these kind of things come up. So, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine anybody, you know, is more valuable to his defense than TJ Watt. But I don't know exactly what Myles Garrett does to rip up offensive game plans that maybe TJ doesn't. It's subjective. It really is. You know, if you're going to sit here and just really pound the table by saying stats don't lie, numbers don't lie, well, then I don't ever want to hear you make an argument that Troy Polamalu was a better safety than Ed Reed, because Ed Reed has way more interceptions than Troy Polamalu. So that's just a slippery slope to go down. People are always going to want to be mad about something. Steelers Nation's very protective of their little TJ Watt, and TJ himself seemed miffed about it too, considering he, in his words, was playing hooky last night at the awards show, which also meant he wasn't there for teammate Cam Hayward to bring home the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which I wish we would spend more time on, because that's an honor that a Steelers player won and was well-deserved, and not one that a Steelers player did not win.
And we'll get to that in a minute. I don't think the safety comparison holds up, because Polamalu and Reed, they line up. When you're a safety, you line up on so many different positions. When you're an edge rusher, you line up on
the Myles Garrett lines up in different gaps as well, Chris. So it's right, to me, it can hold up.
Okay, lines, but he's always at the line of scrimmage, and you have equal opportunity to create pressure at the line of scrimmage.
TJ Watt drops more often than Myles Garrett. He gets interceptions by dropping into coverage because of his
and he drops more often than Myles Garrett, and yet still gets better production against in his pass rushing, which I think again goes toward the idea that he's more productive and he's a better player at rushing the quarterback than Myles Garrett, which, if that's Myles Garrett's one quality and he doesn't have the other thing going for him, that kind of shows that I think that's another argument for TJ Watt in that conversation. But again, when you're talking about,
and I'll use a different comparison. Let's do Ben Roethlisberger versus a whole bunch of quarterbacks that Steelers fans would say, no, Ben is way better than this guy. I mean, if you want to just go by passing yards, there's going to be people probably above him that your dyed-in-the-wool Steeler supporters would say.
I mean, I think name a quarterback and I'll run with you on that, because I think that there's plenty of quarterbacks that have you know, higher numbers than Ben Roethlisberger that are better than him, or don't have higher numbers that number than him because of the eras that they played in. But I'm just my point is that
Drew Brees. I think a lot of Steelers fans think Ben was better than Drew Brees, but Drew Brees.
I think there's definitely an argument for Drew Brees in that situation. Yeah. But again, my whole thing is it would be different if. Again, if Myles Garrett had one or two less sacks than T.J. Watt, or if he had more tackles for loss, if he was clearly more impactful in the run game, and he wasn't. He didn't have more tackles. And for anyone that wants to use double team rates and unblocked sacks or anything like that, Myles Garrett had just as many unblocked sacks this year as T.J. Watt, according to Sports Information Systems. And they're describing there that the double team rates weren't exactly as unbalanced as some people make them out to be. I think T.J. Watt is if you're looking at disruptiveness, if you're trying to create some formula for that, I think TJ Watt is just as disruptive as Myles Garrett. He's just also a lot more productive than Myles Garrett. So if I think that's the route that a conversation, if we stay objective there, that's the direction that it goes. And I don't see a logical reasoning for Myles Garrett to get the award other than you were tired of seeing Watts win it because JJ Watt had won it three times and TJ Watt had already won it once.
But I really don't buy into that. I don't know. I just don't think that.
I mean, I don't have another reason. Like, again, like we've been told all the time, stats are what matter, productions what matter. And TJ Watt even played on a defense that allowed less points than the Browns. So, you know, I even take out an account of the playoff loss that they lost by, they got, you know, 45 points dropped on them in that game, you know. I looked out throughout the regular season, TJ Watt, more sacks, more pressures, more, more tackles for loss, more interceptions, more passes swatted at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if production isn't supposed to be what we measure guys by, then there can be a lot of subjectivity. You know, there was a person who voted Dexter Lawrence to be, you know, in the defensive player of the year running last night. And yeah, I don't understand how that's
vote. So,
but third place, I don't know, shouldn't have been fifth place.
Well, that's going to be the natural divide between the people who are like, oh, well, you're just a box score watcher, and I'm over here devouring the film. I can't watch all 32 teams, you know, film wise. So, I don't have a great feel for what Dexter Lawrence was doing that transcends the stat line, you know what I mean? But
no,
clearly somebody out there is going to have strong feelings about that.
If film devourer here, no, that doesn't make any sense. And the box score
crushing the Giants tape, Chris.
I mean, I watched around the league, and I've seen Dexter Lawrence play this year, and like, I didn't watch every game that he played, but
right,
he wasn't better than
maybe he got a vote from a Giants beat writer who does. I don't know.
Maybe. My point is that there was a lot of that didn't make much sense there. And I think there's very little room for the argument for it. And it kind of brings into question the objectivity of the voting system as it is right now. But like I said, I wanted to get to the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which Cam Hayward did win. And this is an award. How many years has he been nominated for this now?
This was his sixth nomination for it, third year in a row. I mean, yeah. Obviously he's been a powerhouse for the Steelers in terms of his community commitment and everything he does off the field. It hasn't even been close. They've had other nominees in recent years, Vance McDonald, Marquise Pouncey, but Cam's been the gold standard for quite some time now, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy who's been out there. And I think part of what helps Cam Hayward, too, is that he not only does the great community stuff, he's not only the great person and a great player, but like, I think Cam Hayward is doing one of the best jobs of NFL players who are getting ready to transition out of their career into media. Not saying that Cam Hayward's done after this season, but you know, you look at like what Jason Kelsey's been doing with his New Heights podcast with Travis. I mean, that's like the gold standard. He has like the best podcast or the most listened to podcast in football right now, and he's crushing it. But Cam Hayward, you know, started his own show, and it doesn't like, you know, do booming numbers that break records or anything.
He needs Connor Hayward to start dating one of the preeminent pop stars in America. And then I think that those views will shoot way up.
Connor Hayward dates Dua Lipa, and then it all it just blows up from there. But in all seriousness, like I think that a big part of what helps Cam is that he does so much work to reach out into the community, both via his efforts and via media with his podcast, and also just being everywhere. Like, you know, Cam Hayward's a guy that we've given him the Chief Award, as writers for what he's done with us, because he's always open to talking. Cam Hayward was the first Steeler player I ever talked to after a loss. And it was after that Bears loss when Villanueva saluted and the Steelers were really ticked about that and losing in overtime. And like he was, and I saw how angry he was. And when I spoke to him, I was like, oh, this is going to be my first angry Steeler I've talked to in the locker room. And he handles it so professionally every time, win or lose. And I think that's where he's exemplified that, but also the work that he's done in the community. I think that this is a guy who's gone three extra miles. I mean, people say go to the extra miles, you can triple that. And that's kind of what Cam Hayward has done over the years to be this guy and earn this award.
Yeah, and it's just a cherry on top, too, that he's actually from here originally. He was born in Pittsburgh. We know his dad, the late Ironhead Hayward, not from Pittsburgh, but played at Pitt, was a star for the Panthers, and married Charlotte Hayward from Highland Park. So, I mean, it's just a cool story from that perspective for both him and the franchise. And I really feel like pretty much anybody in the community here can feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in Cam, and he's been an exemplary Steeler for sure, not just for what he does off the field, but you mentioned sort of being the nice guy all the time in the locker room too, leadership, and I'll just say on the field, because that is a component of Walter Payton. Even though it wasn't his best season, the guy always plays 110%. That's probably contributing to some of his body breaking down at this point at age 34, but it's hard to find a Steeler who plays harder than he does, chasing after the ball, eating up blocks. Yeah, eating up blocks at the line of scrimmage. He does everything right in that regard for sure.
He's exemplified. Like, there's guys who I think you like a title called Mr. Steeler could apply to. When you're the guy that carries Franco Harris's flag out of the locker room just a couple days after Franco Harris has passed away, like, you're forever locked in there. I think this is an interesting question here. The Hall of Fame class was announced last night. Does Cam Hayward ever get in the Hall of Fame?
Can't we just let him have his Walter Payton moment? I mean, always got to spin it forward. And because I thought you were initially going to go to like, well, here's an interesting question. Like, will Cam Hayward ever win a playoff game again, let alone a Super Bowl, which that's not looking great either. I don't even really want to get into all that. Let's save that for an offseason show where we have nothing to talk about.
I was just saying, we're talking about how great the guy is and how awesome he was for so many years. Would he get in that conversation? He's obviously going in a ring of honor.
Let's bring it back up in like March or April instead of doing mock draft 73.6 or something like that.
Buddy, we're going to do a mock draft 173.6. Yeah. So you better get ready for that. But anyways, we got to switch topics. When we come back, we'll talk about not just the Super Bowl, who's going to win, but what the Steelers can learn from some of these Super Bowl teams. That and more here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Brian Batko. We'll be right back. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Brian Batko, talking to you Steelers here. So everyone's going to talk about, who they think is going to win, the Chiefs, Niners. I think the Niners are favored by 2.5 right now. That's all fine and good. But Brian had this idea of a topic, and I thought this was a good one. What can the Steelers learn from either of these teams and how they play right now? And I think that's an interesting way to look at this, because these are two teams that can – that do several things really well right now. Like, the Chiefs, for all of the talk that's going to be about Patrick Mahomes, their defense is why they're at the Super Bowl again this year. They were the number two defense all season long. They played very well, and they were very good in the playoffs. They were able to limit the Bills for a time to hold on to that lead. They were able to shut down the Dolphins. They completely limited Lamar Jackson and the Ravens in a game that, a lot of people had the Ravens going in and doing what they had done all year long. And you look how they're constructed. They have good corners, good athletic linebackers, a really tough defensive front. They've done a lot of things right this this year when it comes to that. And I wonder if is the biggest thing you want to take from the Chiefs, if you wanted to take one thing from the Chiefs and then plan it on the Steelers, is it how their defense comes together, or is there something else that's still on the offense that intrigues you about how the Chiefs got here again?
So it's kind of both. It's more about how they've been built. I'm going to say late round picks matter. Day three draft picks matter. I mean, first of all, when is the last time the Steelers hit on a day three pick? I mean, Dan Moore Jr. has been a starter, and yet I don't know that a lot of people would consider that a hit. Kevin Dotson, kind of similar, and they were both fourth rounders. Jury's out on Nick Herbig. We'll see. Calvin Austin, we'll see. The two most recent fourth round guys. But man, I mean, you look at the Chiefs, Chris. Trey Smith, who's been on their offensive line starting for the last 3 years, he was a sixth round guy out of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Pacheco was a seventh round pick. Jalen Watson plays a lot for them at corner. Seventh round pick. Like, if I'm the Steelers, just we got to stop throwing away these kind of end of the draft. And obviously, no one's trying to do that. You're not trying to misevaluate a player or, you know, not develop somebody. But I think too often you just get stuck in this mindset of like, yeah, why not? Chris Oladokun, who cares? It's the second seventh round pick. Probably won't make the team anyway. Just look at what the Chiefs are doing to sort of get contributions from people who are on not just rookie contracts, but cheap rookie contracts. I think that matters. I think that can help you get over the top in the NFL. And obviously it's all kind of window dressing when you have Mahomes at quarterback, but these guys are contributing to winning in a way that Steelers day three draft choices simply have not been in recent years.
I think it's a very interesting point there about that because, you know, the Steelers have had smaller contributions from guys like Trey Nord brought help on special teams, but he wasn't, you know, bigly impactful the way that Isaiah Pacheco had been. You know, they tried to get Presley Harvin, you know, at punter. If Presley Harvin's a better punter, not that that wins you a whole bunch more games or anything like that, but it at least protects this offense that had been struggling a little bit more. They've missed there. Kevin Dotson was the one player who I think you could say, like, hey, talent-wise, they found something there. They just didn't make it work on their own roster, and now they have an extra draft pick because of him, but it's also a day three draft pick, which they still have to hit on. And yeah, you're right.
Do they have an extra pick, or they just got an earlier pick?
They got an earlier pick. That's right. But they switched it into like a, you know, they now have two back to back fourth round picks.
Yeah.
But point being, they now have a two fourth round picks at their disposal this year to have a better rate at that. And when you look at it, last year they only had three day three picks. They had a fourth and two sevenths. And, you know, like you said, we still got to see how Nick Herbig develops. He certainly, for a rookie who, you know, played as few snaps as he did, he was very productive in those snaps. And Corey Trice, you know, got injured before the season even started. You know, I'd say Connor Hayward's doing well for a third string tight end right now, you know, but again, we're talking about guys who are starting and helping you win games right now in more than just a couple plays here and there. And that is something where the Steelers could kind of take from the Chiefs and say, hey, let's start hitting on these. And also I'll say this, you know, this is also just the second year where Omar Khan and his staff will have to draft guys. And last year, all he had was one fourth and two sevenths in the day three picks. I do think it'll be interesting to see how they use them this year compared to, you know, how they did in years before. Like you said, Oladokun and guys like that didn't work out. Let's talk about the Niners real quick. What have they done that has impressed you the most this year? Because their defense has a ton of big names on it, and they weren't as productive. They weren't as productive as a defense as the Chiefs were this year. Instead, I think it was their offense that truly impressed me. And I think their offense is a lot closer to what the Steelers want to do with their offense than the Chiefs and what they do.
So I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction for this one too, because again, it would be easy to say, yeah, you should go find an all-pro quarterback a Pro Bowl quarterback with the last pick of the draft. Every team should do that if you can handle that, like Brock Purdy. But no, I'm going to say, just looking at the Chiefs and kind of how they – or excuse me, the Niners and how they operate, I was counting this up today, Chris. I think the Steelers had 19 coaches on their staff last season, including Matt Canada. So that dropped by one after he got fired midseason. Unless I'm missing something with some of these people's roles during games and whatnot and titles, the 49ers have 28 coaches. They've got and Kyle Shanahan's kind of an interesting case because he's the de facto offensive coordinator. They don't even have one of those in title. But, you know, they've got the pass game coordinator, Clint Kubiak, who's now going over to the Saints to be their OC. They've got, you know, O-line coach, assistant O-line coach, running back coach, assistant running back. Like, up and down the line, they've got multiple coaches at each position. They've got in-game strategy type of people. They have a Nichols coach who also does special teams assisting. So, like, they've really just – they've got that robust staff that I think it gives you more eyes on problems to help find solutions. And we've talked about this plenty of times. We think the Steelers need to get with the modern ages a little bit in terms of paying more people to do more work for your football team as coaches. And I don't know that we're going to see that this offseason, but one team that I would point to right now that's going to be playing for the Lombardi Trophy on Sunday would be the 49ers, who they have arguably the best head coach in the game right now in Shanahan because of what he does offensively. But he's not saying, oh, I only need 13 or 14 assistants because I'm so good. No, they've got a whole bunch of people out there to round that out and, you know, do all sorts of different tasks and stuff that's probably way beyond our comprehension in terms of looking at what NFL assistants do.
What's the saying? I think it's like too many chefs in the kitchen spoil the soup or something like that.
Too many cooks. Yeah.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. So like that's been a classic saying. Like,
I think Tomlin has even said that maybe, or maybe he just said too many voices.
So but I know that Pat Narduzzi has said that. I didn't know if Mike Tomlin had said that, but I feel like you're right. Like in today's NFL, you want more eyes on things. There's so many things to analyze, and the Steelers acknowledge like, hey, we use analytics. We just don't use it in the way that maybe some other people use it, and maybe they could use additional sets of eyes and ears in things. Look what Brian Flores did for their defense, and I know that Brian Flores is kind of an extreme example there because of his experience and everything, but you know, Mike Vrabel, I think, is still floating out there. What could he bring to the table if you brought him in just as an extra assistant? What could more guys from college, like, you know, guys like Tom Arth, who was brought up to the NFL level to be a pass game specialist for the Chargers, you know, what if the Steelers brought in some of those innovative thought, you know, hires of guys like, hey, I like their system. I liked how they handled things in the college with this level of offense. Let's bring him in, get him used to the NFL and see if we like it. If we don't, we move on and get another guy in the future years. But I think that's another way in how people build coaching staffs is finding those guys who are using these positions that they kind of create to bolster their staff instead of just hiring for every position coach, kind of what the Steelers have kept over the years.
Yeah. And the Niners are also a good example of coaching tree is, you know, it's not insignificant. I always tell people when they bring up Tomlin's lack of one, it's like, what would you rather have, playoff wins or, you know, coaches getting promoted at different franchises? But I mean, the Niners have been churning out a whole bunch of dudes over these last few cycles. Mike McDaniel going from whatever his role was there. Again, not offensive coordinator because that's Shanahan's thing, but he goes to the Dolphins. Robert Saleh goes from their defensive coordinator to the Jets head coach. And I think their current DC, Steve Wilks, was in the mix for some jobs again this year. We'll see. Kubiak will go to the Saints as their offensive coordinator. Those are things that just organically happen, I think, when you have more positions for coaches, whether it's, again, you know, assistant wide receivers coach, which the Steelers don't have, assistant special teams, assistant, you know, running backs, or just quality control entry-level stuff for young guys who might have, bright football minds and a hunger to help out whatever team employs them. So, again, you know, I always say it's not my money. I'm not the ones paying these guys. It is different from Pat Narduzzi at Pitt to Tomlin with the Steelers in college. You can only have so many on-field coaches. That staff is capped in the NFL. Go wild, have as many as you want. We know the Steelers are consistently on the lower end of that. I would assume that the Niners are consistently on the higher end of that, though I haven't counted every team's staffers. But, they've got a lot of them, and they've been having a lot of success for sure.
I'm right with you there on that. I think that that's certainly a change we haven't. And we'll see if it is a change because the Steelers still could add more to their coaching staff. Will they? Stick with us at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll keep you updated all throughout the offseason. Post-Gazette.com for all the written work that we have. And follow us here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Brian Bacco. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. We're back Monday with our thoughts here. Maybe a little bit of post-Super Bowl thoughts. I got to get on the road for Pitt versus Virginia in a huge basketball game that could, you know, determine their
– Go to Charlottesville, Chris?
Going to Charlottesville with Noah. Noah and I are hitting the road.
I love Charlottesville. Have you been there?
No, this will be my first time.
I'll hit you up with some recommendations. That's one of my favorite ACC college towns for sure.
Ooh, I'm liking it. We're going a day early, so we'll have some time on Monday evening.
Are you a history guy? Are you going to go to Monticello?
I was thinking about it.
It's actually really cool.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. If you have time. I don't know.
We're gonna talk it out, but I'm going with my boy Noah's a party animal, man. So Noah might be taking us to all the clubs.
He doesn't want to see Thomas Jefferson's old Virginia. It's funny, when I went there covering Pitt, it was a Pitt football game. One of the first people I see who is taking like the little golf cart up to the house, Paul Zeiss. I would not have thought, but Paul contains multitudes. So I wonder what he and the tour guide. We're talking about at Monticello.
Well, I'll find out when I'm in Charlottesville. But he's Brian Batgum, I'm Chris Carter. Thanks again for tuning in for the North Shore Drive podcast. Back Monday with our post-Super Bowl thoughts here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll see you then right on your favorite podcasting app or on YouTube.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.